Now, let's welcome two guests to the studio, and it's very nice to see Pune Rone back with us. She's the founder of the Brain and Learning, essentially bringing brain training, Pune, to the Middle East, 6 years ago. You've been away for a few months, but nice to see you.
It's lovely to be back here.
Look forward to chatting to you again. You've been away doing a PhD, so we'll start there in a moment. But you brought a friend, as it were, a lifeline maybe in this situation today, the way it works. Tanya Mitchell's the Vice President of Research and Development. Let me get this right, Tanya. Brain RX, is that right?
Yes, Brain RX and Learning RX.
Okay, so you're the daughter of the founder. That's Dr. Ken Gibson. He's the author of Unlock the Einstein Inside. So we'll try and do that in a few moments' time. Let's start with you. Though, Pune, you've been doing a PhD at the University of Bristol, and it's research on the impact of brain training on character, personality, and motivation. So, be honest, I need that translated. What does that really mean?
So basically, as you know, that I was running the Brain and Learning here, and we were offering our students brain training programs. And what we were noticing is that as well as impacting their cognitive skills, like their IQ and their academic abilities, we were quite often hearing from parents that actually their personalities are changing. So kids who were giving up really, really easily before, all of a sudden were able to stick with things for far longer. They were becoming more resilient, more gritty, if you like. And that was really, really interesting for me. And I wanted to know what exactly was resulting in that. Was it the way the program was run? Was it the relationship they were building with their trainers, for example? Or was it actually improving their cognitive skills was resulting in that?
So it was exactly that. It was improving their cognitive skills, and that directly resulted in a different character, a different personality.
Yeah, so basically what the current pilot study that I have run has shown me is that there is like a threshold level of cognitive skills required. So if you think about our mental abilities, our ability, for example, to process language or to think fast or to use our logic and reasoning, if you're thinking of those situations, for example, if your ability falls below this threshold of it, you've got very low ability, then you're not likely to be resilient. You're likely to give up really, really easily. So in order for you to be able to show that kind of self-control and that kind of perseverance in something, you need to actually raise that ability. And that ability then changes your character, if you like.
Well, let's bring Tanya in here, because essentially what that means is, I suppose, Tanya, if you if you train your brain, you raise your game. I know that sounds like a terribly trite phrase, but that's kind of what these studies are showing, isn't it?
Yes, in fact, ability is another word for IQ or intelligence. And we recently published a study in Journal of Applied Cognitive Psychology, and when we focus on all seven cognitive skills, which are sort of your core intelligence skills, that study showed a 21-point increase in IQ. So it takes you from almost an average intelligence to a superior intelligence. And so she's studying how that affects your overall, you know, how willing are you to do something that you don't feel as comfortable with, or you know, how strong are you at different things?
So your outlook on life, really, how much gusto you're going to have at different tasks. I wanted to know, I suppose both of you, really, what kind of brain training is involved? Maybe Tanya, you've done this study. You said that the IQ went up 21 points. What did you have to do to be able to raise your IQ by that much?
Well, it takes a real intense training. I mean, if you sort of think about, you know, let's say you wanted to get physically fit, and you went in and you had one of those trainers that really pushed you, and or you could just go in and try to work out yourself. You know, I mean, when I work out myself, if it doesn't feel good, I stop.
Yeah, we don't even get to the gym, so you're doing better than we are.
Well, that's if I go. But the same way with brain training is when you're doing something that's difficult, if you stop all the time, then you're not going to improve. But if you have a trainer there that helps push you through things that are difficult for you, then after hours of training, you get better. And so the study that we did was based on 60 hours of training with a trainer. That is also what BrainRx is based on, which is what Pune used in her research. And it just shows that no matter which skill you want to improve, if you work at it, whether it be memory or attention or how fast you can do something, not only can you improve it, but you can improve all those skills all at the same time.
So you're not stuck with the brain you're born with.
You are
basically.
Not.
100%. Tim, there's still hope.
did you see the look?
There you go. Sign up. Quick pop.
It's kind of, I mean, there's a bit more to this than practice makes perfect. So we'll come back and look at why your father, Tanya, decided that he was going to get into brain training. Because that, I think, is a really interesting story. He was dyslexic, was an ophthalmologist working with kids. We'll come back and talk about that in a moment. Our guest, Poona Roney, is the founder of Brain and Learning, and we've also got Tanya Mitchell here, who's the Vice President of Research and Development at BrainRx. We're talking brains.
We want to hear from you.
Find us on Facebook.
Tweet at DubaiEye1038FM.
Two guests with us in the studio tonight. Poona Roney is the founder of Brain and Learning. She is with us back after 16 months away working on a PhD. It's good to have you back, Poona. Nice to see you. And also Tanya Mitchell's here, Vice President of Research and Development at BrainRx. I wanted to ask you, Tanya, about your dad. Dr. Ken Gibson is the man who wrote Unlock the Einstein Inside. And I think his story really interests me. He's a doctor, ophthalmologist, also considered dyslexic. So in many ways, as a student, he knows what it's like to find things difficult when other kids perhaps find them a little bit easier. So he's kind of in tune, I suppose. But just run through his story and what led him down this brain training path, if you like.
Well, let me say that he struggled with reading, but he also had really high skills in visual processing and memory and logic. And so I think that's even more difficult sometimes when you have someone who's so smart in some areas but can't do one specific thing. And so he spent the 35 years going through research and trying different methods of trying to help the reader. And what he found took him outside of visual processing or the optometry that he was doing. And it really put him into a whole new field back in the about 20 years ago. When they came out with research that showed a sound-based language, which both English and Arabic would be sound-based, that when you have difficulty reading, it's an auditory processing issue. And so it's how you analyze sound. So, he spent all this time, and what happened is the training that he came up with to help the reader, we started using with all different groups of people, like brain injury or people that, seniors that might have started to lose memory or students with ADHD. And no matter who we've worked with, we've been able to train their skills and improve skills.
Isn't that amazing that you've found that teaching people how to read these sound-based languages actually have to do with your hearing more so than what's written on the paper? That's incredible. Do you know what? I want to go to you, Poona, now. You've brought us in some fun brain facts. Just run through a couple of these for us. I think you're going to test us, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to try anyway. So, first one is about how many times heavier than a chimpanzee's brain is the human brain?
Twice. I haven't looked at the. I should have looked at the answers. Yeah. You emailed some of this earlier, didn't you?
I did.
I should have. Maybe that's the first step to cognitive function.
That's right. That could be an organization, I guess. But it's about three times heavier. So although when you look at the skulls, they don't seem that different in proportion, but actually it is three times heavier, and that could explain some of the differences we see in between human beings and obviously chimpanzees.
And how much does the size of your brain matter, Poona?
And I think this one is a tricky one, because having given you that example, you would think that it matters a huge amount. But we know that, for example, on average, if we control for the size of our body differences between men and women, men's brains actually weigh 10% more than women's brains. But men out there, please do not let this go to your head. It doesn't mean that you're much better or brighter.
Yeah.
In fact, what they have found is that when they looked at Albert Einstein's brain, his brain weighed a little bit below. So the average brain is about 3 pounds in weight, and his brain was only 2.7 pounds in weight. So it was lighter than average brain by 10%, more like a woman's brain, you might say. And that meant that, but they found the neuron density was actually higher in his brain than it is on the average brain. So size actually doesn't matter as much as we thought.
It's just the density of the neurons. Okay.
Okay, so that's just a myth perpetuated by men, essentially, is what you're saying. We kind of knew that anyway. I really like this third point you made. Who are the most forgetful? Those born in the 80s and 90s, I'm just pointing. Yeah. The so-called millennials, or those born in the 1940s to the early 70s, it is kind of the generation before the Generation X's before that, and the baby boomers as well. So what's the answer to that one?
So the recent studies have shown that it's actually the millennials, and we all know that our memory deteriorates with age after age 30, and that's why brain training could be a way of like kind of boosting and bolstering that. But the big thing that also affects our memory is our attention levels. And when we are really distracted, we don't remember things well. And what they have found is that millennials are far too distracted, Alex.
It's probably true.
I can say this just because I was born in the 70s, not the 80s or 90s. And they're more likely to forget their keys or lose things.
I just think we rely a lot on the internet to remember things for us now.
Yeah.
Is that part of the problem?
Yeah, that's not the internet remembering it for you. Just putting it out. Feel like that's the internet doing it.
The internet is my brain, basically.
Yeah.
If I forget something, Google is right there.
Yeah. Tanya, I know. You're as confused as I am.
I was born in the 70s, so she's on her own.
Okay, so we've got scientific proof of Hershey, which is good. But your attention span's point is a good one. We often point to goldfish having this terrible attention span, but we're not far from goldfish now, are we?
I know. There's a very disturbing study that came out that said that our attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. They said that in the year 2000, the average attention span was roughly around 12 seconds, and now it's around 8 seconds. And they say the average attention span of a goldfish is 9 seconds. So on average, we are doing worse than the goldfish. And one of the ways they looked at it in this study is they looked at when people, for example, press also the button for the lift, how long they wait before they start getting agitated, and they find that time is dropping significantly, and that people keep starting to press it again and again and again, hoping that it's going to make it come faster. But they're saying that really the way we are leading our lives right now, the amount of distractions that we are allowing our brains to be exposed to is affecting how long we can be interested. And that's why we want shorter and shorter stories. We want just snippets rather than in-depth understanding of anything.
Yeah. Hence Twitter.
Exactly. Hence Twitter, soundbite culture, you know, looking for 5 seconds on YouTube and that being enough to learn something. Clearly it's not. It's good that you're here on Halloween, actually, because there's a spooky fact to finish off. I wanted to bring this up. You say we remember scary things well. So effectively, if we took the old school approach to scaring kids into learning, we actually might learn something slightly better.
Yeah, so the brain was designed so that if something traumatic happens to you, you remember it really well, so you don't let that same thing happen to you again. So for example, if you're bitten by a dog, that's why you would stay frightened of the dog, and you remember that incident really, really well because it was quite traumatic. So if you want someone to be learning something, you can just, and you, in the spirit of trying to help them remember it well, you can go and scare them, and that means that they're more likely to recall that fact later on. So
scare them while you say the answer, and then it's just it's there forever.
That's not part of our training, by the way.
2 + 2
This is just a special thing for tonight.
I like the way Tanya jumps in there with, by the way.
Disclaimer, I like that. Do you know, just briefly, Tanya Arajis says, so what's the name of the company for the brain training?
Well, Learning Rx in the U.S., and then our international program is Brain Rx.
Okay. So, but that the scaring thing is not parental advice. We should also point that out. It's not scare your kids.
Yeah.
But actually, it's a good point, isn't it? We do that subconsciously because you'll say, don't cross the road there at that busy point because you might get run over and die. I mean, that's kind of a subconscious thing that we do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's something more to that, I think. Yeah. Well, it's Halloween, so we're allowed to end on that note. Our final piece of advice is stick to the path on this particular day, of course. Pune Roney is from The Brain and Learning, back in Dubai on holiday visiting. Hopefully see you back soon, Pune. Nice to see
you.
And Tanya Mitchell, Vice President of Research and Development at BrainRx. Tanya, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks for coming in. That's it on Drive Live.
That's it. We'll catch you from 4 tomorrow.